This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too. And let's start the year with a non-farm payroll day, of course, Ed. And the latest US jobs figures show that the numbers slowed last month as firms struggle a bit to hire workers and continue to come to terms with the effects of coronavirus and, of course, Omicron and all that. But the jobless rate dropped sharply to 3.9% and wages rose as well. So despite the fact that employers hired just 199,000 people in December, there were some positives. So is it a mixed picture, or you're saying it's more on the positive side when you come to balance out the two?
I think overall, the report was still positive. There was, yes, a big miss with the headline, but it will do nothing to change the Fed's hawkish course. And when you take a look at Fed rate hike expectations, the March meeting, the expectations went from 74% to slightly above 80%. And when you dig deep into the details, I think a lot of the reasons why we had that headline miss was because there is a labor shortage. And when you compare this non-farm payroll report with the household survey, that showed 651,000 people found employment. And what complicates all these different employment statistics that we compare, the household survey probably does a little bit better of a job of it might be considered more forward-looking and does highlight some of that self-employment, whereas the official reading does not. So you can make a strong case here that the economy is still seeing pretty steady hiring. And when you also take into consideration, they had an October revision, which was pretty hefty. It was complemented with, a rather strong surge in wage growth. And that is the key takeaway. We're pretty much at maximum employment. If you're seeing year over year, 4.7% increases, 0.6% on the month, that signals that employers are capitulating and they're finally giving significant wage increases, and that signals that we're pretty much I think at full employment here. And when you consider we've recovered almost all the jobs lost in COVID, I think there's still under 4 million jobs that we still have to recover. But when we don't have a good handle on those self-employment figures, and I think the problem with some of those data points is that when you compare all the other high frequency data, it doesn't look like we're seeing that much of an issue here with the labor market outlook. So I think the economy is preparing for Fed rate hikes. I think before the end of the year, people were thinking three. Now people are talking four. And this opens up the big debate now, because everyone is concerned about, well, what happens now that, obviously the growth story for the U.S. is going to be strong. We're going to have a strong economy. And the current gauge right now, households, corporate balance sheets, they're in very good shape. And, when we get through those first couple rate hikes, the economy is going to be able to handle that. The big question is, and what really unnerved markets this week was the Fed minutes. And it's with those Fed minutes that we saw that the Fed was looking to have a more aggressive stance in addressing that balance sheet. Balance sheet reduction is what unnerved markets. The balance sheet reduction is why we saw Treasury yields pretty much go from the low 150s to now we're just shy of 180. That is significant. And I think when you consider that move, that shows you that markets are they weren't prepared for that. As the Fed is not going to be there, I think that's why you're continuing to see yields rise here. And that's going to really be, I think, the focal point in these next couple Fed meetings, in addition to those rate hikes. So it is It's an interesting story because now you're seeing risk aversion mostly settle in, because I think a lot of traders, they're still a beat for the year, but you know, if we see the Fed deliver 3 rate hikes, possibly 4 this year, the concerns are with that balance sheet reduction. You're looking at possibly a quicker return to normal growth, and that means if we see a neutral rate at really at 1.5% or 1.75%, you could be looking at a potential recession at some point in 2024, and that is something that 2 months ago no one was really thinking that was a strong potential situation here, and that's because of this balance sheet reduction issue. So the labor market is very strong, and this is paving the way for this hawkish stance on the Fed. So it'll be interesting to see how the labor market and how these inflationary pressures continue to drive the Fed. But I think, there is strong optimism. Inflation will start to ease as the weather gets warmer in the second quarter of the year.
And you mentioned a potential recession in 2024. Well, that's the interesting thing about that is, of course, U.S. election in 2024, UK election more than likely around that time as well. So you've got to wonder whether governments, finance ministers, chancellors of the exchequers and so on are going to allow that recession to happen just when they don't want it to. And all the data you just mentioned would point to the chances of a recession and, of course, much higher inflation, if not in the short term, certainly in the medium. So it would be a worry to those governments, wouldn't it? And I just wonder what measures they'd have to take to prevent that happening when they don't want it to happen.
Well, I think right now the Biden administration is extremely nervous. It's already, we've heard from the president a couple times, he's speaking right now, and you're seeing there's a lot of nervousness. The Democrats are looking like they're going to lose poorly in the midterms, and we're not seeing Build Back Better get finalized. This Build Back Better, the last major piece of legislation that will probably get done before we get to midterms is really going to show you that we're at peak monetary and fiscal stimulus right now, and I think the economy is prepared for that. So the Biden administration they might have to resort to executive orders to try to provide some support as people head to the polls. But this is going to be a frustrating remainder of his his last couple of years in off. The completion of his first term, because it's going to be difficult to get anything done. And the problem right now is you just have too much politics that are really preventing a lot of the key things that need to be outlined to keep the recovery going. The Biden administration still needs to appoint 3 Fed members. You still have several key appointments that need to be done to allow that when Build Back Better does get finalized to implement these last few fiscal initiatives. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, but right now it just seems that Democrats are looking like they're going to be in trouble when it comes to midterms and also the 2024 election.
And it all points to that famous old phrase, it's the economy, stupid, doesn't it? Because when you think about why Trump lost the election, it wasn't because of the politics. It was mainly because of coronavirus and what it did to the economy. And you could say the same thing could happen to Biden in 2024, possibly with Trump becoming president yet again. It's going to be a very interesting few years, isn't it?
Very much so. It will be extremely unpredictable. And I think that it is interesting to see how the Republican Party does not know how they're going to go about who is going to represent them, and how the president, former President Trump, is not been very clear on what he will be doing. But I know that they're, it is a divided country, and that you're seeing a lot of frustration on both sides. And I think that Biden's chances, and given his age, you know, it's not even a foregone conclusion that he will go for another term. So, you know, the election for 2024 is a big question mark, and there's too many variables right now to really get a strong handle on it.
Yeah, and then we've got a long way to go, Ed, but I'm thinking we're going to get President Trump again, and if he thinks he can win, he will stand, absolutely. And I can imagine it's going to be a tricky one for the Democrats to get out of that hole, because if you add the politics to the economics, then it says victory for the Republicans under President Trump. But anyway, let's not get too much embroiled into that. Let's go back to markets and the economy of early 2022. I wanted to ask you about the oil price situation, which it's been fairly steady this week. Brent crude staying around about the $80 a barrel mark. And that is after OPEC Plus agreed to stick with its planned increase for February. And that included the indications that Omicron will only have a mild impact on demand. It certainly looks that way. Where I'm sitting here in the United Kingdom and where you are in the United States, we're trying to carry on with business as usual. That might not be the case in many other parts of the world, but I think both those governments, US and UK, it's full steam ahead, really. And as Boris Johnson said, perhaps controversially the other day, we're going to try and ride this one out. And if we do try and ride this one out, that suggests that the economy will continue to grow. And hence, that is why OPEC Plus agreed to stick with its planned increase.
Yeah, very much so. It was a busy week for oil. And I think you had OPEC Plus, they went ahead with another 400,000 barrel day output increase, which showed that, you know, their confidence in the recovery, and they're not too worried about Omicron. But also, when you know if you really follow you know, what's happening with OPEC, you know, a lot of countries are not living up to their quotas. So 400,000 is not really 400,000. Even Russia fell shy of their quota. So it just I think it was something that traders knew that this is nothing. We're not really worrying that we're going to have oversupply anytime soon. And I think when you take into consideration what we saw as far as some of the other key stories, you know, there was some unrest in Kazakhstan, which you know, right now it seems like those fears have eased, but that potentially put at risk some oil supply. And then Libya had some outages. And you have to remember, this oil market is extremely sensitive. If you have any OPEC member has a disruption, you're going to see prices rally. And I think one of the key takeaways is that, you know, air travel, despite everything we saw with Omicron, there is still strong optimism that, you know, because this new variant, expectations are this is going to pass fairly quickly, that in the U.S. we're going to see the peak in the next couple weeks. And then, you know, summer is expected to be extremely busy. Yes, we're always going to be at risk of a new variant, but there is strong optimism that the vaccines have shown they've been very good at holding up well, and they can be tweaked if needed. But I think large parts of the country, and it keeps growing, they're ready to live with this virus. So I think you're going to see that return to normal behavior and travel and driving and going back to the office will pick up. And I think one of the big takeaways is that you are seeing some controversy. There are some companies, like I think Citigroup today, they announced that they're going to fire vaccine holdouts this month in their strict U.S. mandate, and there's you even had in Australia Novak Djokovic getting sent back. I think the push to get vaccinated, a lot of the people that were on the fence, they finally went forward and got vaccinated. So I think that you're going to see herd immunity reached hopefully a lot sooner. And I think for oil, you're having all these demand outlook scenarios look pretty optimistic. And I think that given that we're sort of entering that peak winter period, you're probably going to see that prices should remain elevated, I think. And I think the trading range will likely be $80 to $100. But, even if we do tentatively test above 100, that won't last. That would automatically trigger more production and yield responses from governments and tapping reserves. So I think right now we're still at a healthy at levels that could still see some further upside here, and I know this market is tight and it's probably going to remain tight for at least a couple more months.
Do you think the current crisis in Kazakhstan is making some markets jumpy about what could happen in terms of the price of oil and so on?
I think it just reminded traders of all the geopolitical risks. You have Russia, the Ukraine. There is a handful of risks that could lead to some type of disruptions. Libya included, and I think that you're seeing that. I think the market knows that there's always been fears that you're going to have political unrest in the summer, and I think that now you're probably going to see that a lot of these African countries have been struggling with their quotas. It just looks like as we find the market trying to work its way to balance, it just seems that there's always some type of disruption here that is keeping prices heading higher. And OPEC is very happy with what's happening. Yes, U.S. production has been recovering, but it's nowhere near the levels that we saw under the Trump administration. And because of the commitments to clean energy, it's only going to decrease. I think you should be expecting higher oil prices going forward, and I think that you're likely to see that this is a market that is quickly becoming a favorite trade again. Just a year and a half ago, everyone just gave up on trading oil and they just said, no, this is we're focusing on clean energy. And now it seems that this trade is back and people are realizing that, yes, there's a transition to clean energy, but it's going to be a lot longer to completely adopt that. And I think that, this energy trade is probably going to be pretty healthy for another decade.
Okay, let's talk cryptocurrency now, Ed. And Bitcoin prices have fallen to their lowest level in months. That was following some remarks from the US Fed. I mean, if we're looking at the numbers, it dropped in value from $47,000 earlier in the week to less than $42,000. But what's more interesting is what's happening with Ethereum.
Yes, the best performing asset class, Ethereum, the best performing asset. It is amazing to see the free fall. Bitcoin is down 9% in January, Ethereum down almost 13%. And Ethereum had a major setback. I think the optimism that Ethereum was winning the blockchain race and that they were going to, for the most part, be able to solidify their lead in being the preferred chain that has all the smart contracts built on top. And you had the founder, Vitalik Buterin, say that they're only 50% of the way there. And I think that for a lot of traders was very surprising. The problem right now is that you have several blockchains, Solana, Polkadot, and everyone's trying to figure out, how do they maximize scalability, but also not giving up security and decentralization. And Ethereum, it was thought that they had a good handle on that. And the problem is that they're nowhere near that goal, and it just really surprised a lot of people that they're probably years away from that, and that the fact that Ethereum is not ready for direct mass adoption really kind of it took the wind out of a lot of retail traders, and I think that you know, you've seen so much interest in Ethereum, and now you know, you have these top two cryptos that are struggling because over the past couple months they've been down, and mostly if you look at the charts, it's been very choppy to sideways, and a lot of traders have been just used to it just, for the most part, having some dips, but mostly still a strong bullish trend. And now many of these traders are now focusing on NFTs and all these other different markets that are seeing significant appreciations. So I think that the crypto trade has, you know, the bull run has definitely hit a major roadblock here, and now you're probably going to see that, you know, there needs to be another, you know, major, you know, sell off before it really attracts a lot of investors. And now I think, you know, Bitcoin looks very vulnerable to a break below 40,000 and Ethereum below 3,000. So I think 35, 37 for Bitcoin is probably where you'll see a lot of value. And that would be a level where a lot of the early institutional traders would have had initially invested in Bitcoin. So you would probably see them look to average more into their position. So it's a terrible start for the year. And you know, what makes it harder for cryptos is the surge in treasury yields. And I think that now you're going to probably see that the interest has definitely dropped off, and it'll be a tough, you know, road back to record highs. But I think there is still a lot of institutional money that is still betting long term.
Okay, it's going to be a very interesting year ahead, Ed. But what about the week ahead? What should we look out for over the next 7 days or so?
Yeah, and the week ahead, I think for me, there's a couple of standouts, and for me in the U.S., you have the latest inflation report, which is going to show inflation is extremely elevated. The year over year reading is going to most likely top 7%, 7.1% is the estimate. That would be a nearly a four decade high. That's pretty significant. We're also I think it's important we're on Fed watch because the Biden administration, they're running out of time. They really need to make those three appointments. And in addition to that, we'll hear from Senate Jerome Powell. He'll have a confirmation hearing along with Lael Brainard for the she's nominated as the second term as a Federal Reserve Chairman. There's a lot of geopolitical events to risks to follow. U.S.-Russian talks are starting. In addition to that, it's the kickoff of earnings season. We'll hear from the banks. That is always important. The banks will really give us a good insight on, you know, how strong is the economy, the U.S. consumer. In addition to that, we have a wrath of U.S. data where we'll learn more about retail sales, spending in December. It's supposed to slow down. In addition to that, industrial production, consumer sentiment, supposed to slightly weaken as well. So it's a busy week, especially in the U.S. Abroad, you know, we also have some key data out of Asia. China has their PPI, CPI readings, Eurozone industrial production on Wednesday, Russian CPI as well. One of the key currencies we've been tracking too has been Turkey industrial production is on Thursday, which I think is also when we'll get the weekly reserve data, which they did not tap their reserves this week. They had a major reduction the previous week. And as they defend their currency, as they resort to extraordinary measures to prevent the lira from freefall and to try to save any chance of Erdogan getting reelected in the election in a couple of years. Turkey's an important trade. It's provided the most volatility in FX. So Turkey is always on the radar. And on Friday, I think that you're going to have Chinese trade data is also going to be a key one as well, and UK industrial production.
Okay, Ed, very interesting to hear your view of the next week and, of course, the last few days as well. Thanks very much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
This is the Oanda Podcast.